Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann Fisher today. It has been six straight days of protest in downtown Columbus.
This is the Frank County Sheriff's Office. Clear the area.
Hundreds of demonstrators have clashed with police. They've marched up and down High Street from the State House to Ohio State. They've been denouncing the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police and demanding changes in how police treat people of color. At first, everywhere, the protests were ugly. Broken storefront windows, looting, demonstrators throwing rocks and water bottles at police, police responding with force, tear gas, pepper spray, wooden bullets. There are several videos of police officers spraying protesters with tear gas, protesters that appear to be doing nothing but walking by and yelling. But over the past couple of nights, things have quieted down. Columbus Police Chief Tom Quinlan.
Both sides are taking a calmer approach to listen to each other. We need to listen to the public, and the public also has an interest in listening to what the police say, because both sides have needs and concerns in how we can provide for a safe community.
This hour on All Sides with Ann Fisher, a look at the police response to the demonstrations and what we can learn from them going forward. Joining us to start the program is Mayor Andrew Ginther. He's been at the center of all this through the past week. Mayor Ginther, welcome to All Sides.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. I know it's been a difficult week. We appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. The protests have grown more and more incident-free. Fewer broken windows, fewer uses of tear gas. What's been the difference between the last 2 days and the first 2 days of the demonstrations?
Well, I think I marched with protesters on Sunday and then again last evening, and I think what we've seen is earlier on, I think it was more challenging for both the police and for peaceful protesters to realize that there was this small minority criminal element that quite honestly has been trying to hijack this movement. These folks from the extremes that are interested in creating chaos and violence, folks that were responsible for a lot of the destruction, burning of buildings and breaking out windows and storefronts, and creating violent confrontations with police. And so I think the overwhelming majority of peaceful protesters that are out there that I talked to last night, talked to again on Sunday, know that the police have a role to play in keeping them safe. But those peaceful protesters were very clear with me in what was happening early on. And that's why after Saturday, when I thought we were overly aggressive and our engagement with peaceful protesters didn't meet my or the community's expectations, I shared very direct counsel with and direction with the chief on Sunday morning. And I think that has made a big difference in how our officers are engaging peaceful protesters. There's a different way to engage. The police have to engage differently with this small minority criminal element and the overwhelming majority of peaceful protesters. And I think you've seen that.
So, Mayor, are you putting all of the blame on a small minority of protesters? And do you put any of the blame on
I wouldn't even call them protesters. Protesters are people that are down here calling for action on racism and discrimination and calling for reforms with criminal justice and police. Those are protesters. There's a very small number of folks from the extremes that, quite honestly, Mike, are coming from outside our community.
I'm going to stop you there, Mayor, because we have the list of arrests, and they just came out this morning. 90 people have been arrested from Thursday until last night. 85 of those 90 people have 4-3 zip codes, which means they are from Central Ohio. Where is the evidence that outside folks are coming in and causing trouble? And I should also point out the folks who do not have 4-3 zip codes face the least serious charges, mainly failure to disperse. All of the charges for rioting, disorderly conduct, assault on a police officer, all of those folks live in Central Ohio. So where are the outsiders?
Well, the outsiders are exactly where they are in other major cities around the country. I mean, there are reports of you know, folks that are organizing and conducting criminal activity, you know, under the guise of being part of this movement of peaceful protesters. That may not be reflected in the arrests thus far, but clearly the intelligence from the Division of Police and what we're gathering from the state clearly indicates that there are folks that are coming from outside.
Can you share some of that evidence? Can you share some of that evidence?
That are coming from outside Central Ohio.
From where? From where?
That are engaging in these activities.
From where? Name some cities. Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Indianapolis. Where are they coming from?
There are a lot of folks from around Ohio that are involved with fringe elements, and there's some folks from outside the state.
Okay, but you don't have any, you can't share any of that intelligence to because we have this, this is a representative sample of, you would assume, the folks who got arrested are the largest troublemakers, correct? And 85 of 90 have Central Ohio addresses.
There are folks that have been arrested that have been part of those criminal activities as well, but it's a very small minority. Considering the overwhelming number of peaceful protesters.
All right, let's get to the police response. You talked about your expectations, you also say, okay, whether they're demonstrators or just troublemakers, a small minority of those folks caused a lot of the problems. What responsibility to perhaps a small minority of police officers? What responsibility do they face in escalating the tension and the trouble on the streets?
Absolutely, and that's why. I gave very direct action for the chief to change the way we were engaging, particularly peaceful protesters, and engage those folks in helping us to identify and really target those that were here to do our city and our citizens harm. That's why we just created the other day, because there are some folks who don't have confidence in the traditional police complaint program through internal affairs. And so that's why we launched the other day a way for folks to share pictures, videos, stories of where they thought they met overly aggressive or abusive engagements with the police through contact CPD at columbus.gov. And they can share those things there. They'll be reviewed by a deputy director, a public safety assistant director, a public safety who heads up our EEO work, and a faith leader. So folks outside the chain of command that are going to review those things and bring forth recommendations or corrective action for officers that might have been engaged with that to the director, the chief, and myself.
Do you favor many people, City Council President Shannon Hardin, Franklin County Commissioner Kevin Boyce, many others, have called for an independent civilian review board with subpoena,
yes,
with subpoena power to provide,
yes,
independent oversight of the police department. Do you support that?
Yeah, and I've said that repeatedly, and it will be my top priority as we enter into negotiations with the FOP this year.
Speaking of the FOP, you've taken a lot of criticism from police union officials. They say you've been undermining their efforts. Yesterday, we heard from local police union president Keith Farrell.
The management has failed us. Leadership in this town has failed these officers, and now we're trying to pick up the pieces, and our officers will continue to do that.
Mayor Ginther, I'll let you respond.
You know, the FOP, this isn't the first time the FOP has criticized me, or certainly won't be the last time. But I don't work for the FOP. I work for the people of Columbus. And whether it's the FOP or any other organization that is out there defending the status quo, that is not going to be part of the solution, that isn't going to join us to fight for justice and reform, the community will hold folks accountable. They're going to hold me accountable. Whether or not we get all the matrix recommendations and the recommendations from the Community Safety Advisory Commission implemented, whether or not we are able to change the culture within the Division of Police, call out racism and discrimination where it exists, and own the remedy to fix it. This is not a time in this movement that I heard from protesters the last few days. It is not acceptable to defend the status quo. And the only thing that will bring us healing in this community is if we seek justice and make sure that reform and change happens this time.
We're talking about the Columbus mayor, Andrew Ginther, about the demonstrations this week and the relationship between police and people of color in the city, and frankly, the plight of people of color in this city. Mayor, this goes deeper than just the relationship with the police. There's a lot of anger among folks of color, a lot of disappointment in how things have gone over, well, frankly, decades. We hear a lot. I asked the same question to Shannon Harden the other day, the president of city council. We hear a lot of talk about the Columbus Way and how it's been successful in boosting development, and the latest example being the Crew Stadium downtown, how we saved that team from moving and built a stadium that's going to be great for downtown, great for those fans. Have we used the Columbus Way enough to solve this problem of racism and the income disparity and the plight of low-income people, of the plight of people of color in the city?
Absolutely not. That's why the prosperity agenda is so important. You have alignment now with both the partnership, formerly 2020, now One Columbus, the city, the county with Rising Together and a focus on eliminating and reducing poverty, the work of city council, great partnerships with our members of Congress and two U.S. senators. This prosperity agenda that we're focused on and our equity agenda has to be our top priority. We have to move with a sense of urgency. We can't talk about some of the other things that are part of our equity agenda. Racism is a public health crisis, lack of affordable housing, you know, making sure that we're growing incomes and that the neighbors in our opportunity neighborhoods are seeing their incomes rise without first addressing violence against people of color at the hands of law enforcement, and change and reform within the division of police. But this equity agenda and our larger prosperity agenda for the region has to be our top priority. The Columbus Way has not been realized and has not benefited everybody in this community yet. And that has to be our top priority, is going after that disparity, because the Columbus Way has to include everyone.
One more question, then we'll let you go. This will happen again. I mean, there will be demonstrations again. It may be years from now, but something's going to happen in this city or in another city that's going to prompt this kind of demonstration. We're not going to solve this problem in the next, you know, probably 3 to 5 years. How will the next demonstration, large demonstration downtown or someplace else in the city, be different? And as far as the police response is concerned and how the city reacts?
Well, you've already seen us acknowledge that we made mistakes and we've changed our course. I think one of the things you're going to see immediately is the Chief's Advisory Council. I'll be appointing members. City Council will be appointing members based on input and direction from the community. Those folks are going to work with the chief to change our policies. The chief has complete control over the policies of everything from, stops in the street to crowd interaction, use of force, the use of chemical agents in crowd control, all of those things. And right now, most of the policies are based on a minimum standard as guided by court precedents and court opinions. We have the ability as a community to raise those standards. That's a minimum, not a maximum. And what the chief is going to do, working with community leaders, is help establish new standards and policies based on community expectations. And I think you're going to see widespread and comprehensive change in the policies and procedures of the Division of Police based on the work of this group.
Will they show up in riot gear, tactical gear, right at the start, or will they hold the gear in reserve and try to keep
that? That will be informed by the community and the work of this group. I think you're going to see significant change, not just in how we continue to handle these protests currently based on community expectations, but this group will make sure that the way we engage from the beginning in future events is meeting and exceeding the community's expectations.
Mayor Andrew Ginther, thank you very much for joining us here on All Sides. We know it's been a long week. It's been a long 3 months, and we appreciate your time here on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Be well, Mike.
Thank you. Be well yourself. When we come back, we'll talk with the police union officials, get his take on how these protests have gone and what can be done to try to heal the divide between police and folks in the community. That's when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We are talking about how police have responded to the demonstrations. They've tried to balance protecting property with protecting freedom of speech. They've faced rocks, water bottles, but also have seemingly indiscriminately used pepper spray and projectiles at members of the protests who seemingly were just walking down the street. We'll try to get to the bottom of this, what can be done to heal the divide between police and the community. Joining us now is Jay McDonald. He is the immediate past president of the Fraternal Order of Police of Ohio. He's been an active police officer for 27 years and now serves as a major with the Marion Police Department. Jay McDonald, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let me start with what happened to George Floyd. What do you think of what happened to him, and what do you think of the video?
Well, I'm not here to defend the actions of the officer in Minneapolis. And in my 27 years as a law enforcement officer, I've never been taught the tactics I saw on that video. And I have faith in the justice system that justice will prevail. And we seem to be on that road as we speak.
What do you think should happen to those officers? They've been fired. One has been charged with murder.
Well, I think that both those actions appear to be correct with the information that I have, and I think they ought to be held accountable.
Which role should their police union, should any police union, play in their case? Should they stand behind them without question or criticism? What's the role of the police union in that kind of case?
Well, the role of the police union is to ensure that their members' rights are upheld. Mm-hmm. It's not to protect bad cops, and it's not to shield cops who commit crimes. It's to make sure that their rights are upheld, both in court and in administrative processes. And that's only fair, and that's only appropriate. The police unions in Ohio specifically, our role is to uphold the rights of the officer, and there's a long precedent for us standing up for those officers. I don't have any problem with that at all.
Well, the criticism is that police unions seem to, you know, stand behind officers vigorously, even when they stand accused of, you know, wrongdoing, clearly evident wrongdoing. But does not happen in your opinion?
Well, we have a legal obligation to represent our members who pay dues to be represented, to ensure that their rights are upheld. Mm-hmm. And that's their job. But however, that doesn't mean that cops condone the actions of bad cops, or that cops condone the actions of the very few cops who break the law.
Okay.
There are 800,000 cops in America. The vast, vast majority of them get it right every single day. Sometimes we make mistakes, and even fewer than that, sometimes cops break the law. And when they do, they need to be held accountable.
Jay McDonald is the immediate past president of the Fraternal Order of Police of Ohio. He joins us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Let's turn to the protests. Why have they been so I hate to even call them riots or violent. Why have they been so destructive and so ugly? I think we could call it at least that. What do you think happened there, especially early on?
Well, there have been protests in all 50 states, and in more than half the states have called out the National Guard. But we've seen here in Ohio two different kinds of scenarios happening in many communities, including mine. We've had protests without any violence. We've had protests without any looting and without any fires. However, in our urban centers across Ohio, they haven't been as fortunate. And quite frankly, I think that there are people in those crowds, a small minority of the people in those crowds who are opportunists and agitators, who are taking advantage of the unrest and of the anger to commit crimes. And law enforcement officers, especially in Columbus, have been subjected to rocks and bottles, as you said, been subjected to fires across the country. We've seen cops who've been shot have Molotov cocktails thrown at them. In Cincinnati, an officer got shot in its ballistic helmet. So these have escalated in instances around Ohio, and we need to stop the violence.
What responsibility do officers have? The critics say when you show up fully armed, riot gear, and you're in the military-style vehicles right off the bat, that increases the tension, and it leads to, whether they be outside agitators or just the most angry of the protesters, to fight back. What responsibility do officers have in their tactics?
Well, I understand that perspective, but imagine you're a law enforcement commander and you're asking men and women to go out and stand in line, knowing yesterday that you were pelted with rocks and bottles, and to go out today without your helmet, or to go out without a shield.
But in Columbus, for example, on Thursday, we hadn't had any protests yet. And Thursday, I believe, that police officers showed up in tactical gear right off the bat. So they didn't have the history of Columbus residents. They saw the protest in Minneapolis, no doubt. But they didn't have the direct experience of things happening right off the bat, and it was high tension right from the get-go.
Yeah, and I get that. But we also have to remember that we've had protests in this state and in this country before the last 7-8 days. Mm-hmm. And officers have been subjected to this kind of violence in the past. And, we have a right to have officers who are safe. And part of that safety is to give them the equipment that it takes to keep them safe. We understand that sometimes that appearance doesn't sit well with every member of our community. But we also have to take into account the men and women who have been placed in that position by the mayor, who signed a curfew and put the cops in that position to enforce that curfew. Mm-hmm. We ought to give them the tools to do that job safely. And, a helmet and a shield help keep those officers safe.
The curfew, of course, came 2 days after the two worst days of the protest, you might argue. Well, I mean, look at the protests themselves. You know, this has been a couple of months of civil disobedience. For the first part of the year, the disobedience came from conservative activists upset with Governor DeWine here in Ohio and his shutdown orders to stop the spread of coronavirus. And hundreds of people show up at the State House, mainly white, if not completely white, crowd, many of them heavily armed with assault-style weapons. And many of them banged on windows at the State House, but they didn't face the same police response that these folks faced. They didn't get tear gassed when they were banging on the State House windows. They didn't get pepper sprayed. And I looked at a lot of pictures from that protest, and I didn't see any officer in tactical gear. What's the difference between how police handle protesters armed with AR-15s and protesters in this past week?
Well, you'd be remiss without saying that people open-carried weapons in the protests throughout Ohio. I know
far fewer though than in the Stay Home Ohio.
Absolutely, the percentage was far, far fewer. There's no doubt about that. But they did exist in a couple hundred person protest in my city. There were multiple people walking around carrying AR-15s, and they did so without violence, and they did so without incident. I think to answer your question directly, I think the answer is in how things moved. I'm unaware of anybody being hit with a rock or a bottle or any fires or any looting or anybody being injured in the protests from earlier in the month. Our officers follow the direction of their elected officials. They weren't given orders to remove them from the State House. They didn't give orders to disperse. And those issues, we can look into why those orders weren't one scenario than they were in other scenarios. But I think you have to take a look at the whole context, and it's not as easy to say one thing happened here and one thing happened there when all of the factors aren't the same.
But the clearest factor is one crowd was young and filled with people of color, and one crowd was white. And is that not evident in an obvious difference in, 2 + 2 = 4? And does that not seem evident to you?
Well, no, I certainly see the difference in the crowd there. There's no doubt about that. But the one crowd was almost exclusively white, and the other crowd was a much more diverse crowd. There's no doubt about that. But what's more important than the race is the actions, and what's more important in the reactions of the police is the presence of rocks and bottles, the presence of assaults, the presence of fires, the presence of looting, of those kinds of things, much more important than the appearance of the people who are protesting.
Let's move on to some of the deeper issues. We're talking with Jay McDonald. He's the immediate past president of the Ohio Fraternal Order of Police. He's now a major with the Marion Police Department. He's been a police officer for 27 years. One of the frustrations that the protesters cite is that they say police need more oversight. Do you support a civilian review board, a more independent oversight of the police that has some teeth to it, say, has subpoena power, board with subpoena power, to investigate police issues?
We have civilian oversight in every single police department in this state. Police departments are overseen by mayors. They're overseen by city councils. They're overseen when there is allegations of wrongdoing by grand juries. And the police often are broadly painted with a brush that doesn't apply to all officers. So I believe we already have that kind of oversight, and I don't see a need for a subpoena power civilian review board in most cases.
But as you know, the number of times police officers are charged and convicted with using excessive force is somewhere between very rare and never. And the law of averages says more police officers should be charged, at least one, two, over 20 years, which has not happened in Franklin County here. Do you understand, when you look at those statistics, and you look at the police officer in Minnesota who had 17 misconduct citations, was involved in three shootings, one of which was fatal, do you understand the lack of faith in the current system, the grand jury system? I agree, they're civilians, but they are civilians that have close ties to the police. Prosecutors have close ties to police. Mayors have close political ties with police. Do you understand the lack of faith in that current system?
Well, I understand that some people feel that way, and I understand why. I think, but we need to understand that the use of force by law enforcement officers is an extremely rare thing. And the use of force by law enforcement officers that is not reasonable is an even more rare thing. When cops commit crimes, they need to be held accountable. When cops break policies, they need to be held accountable. And we have plenty of avenues to make that happen now. To say that because a prosecutor doesn't do his job, we should change the rules of the game because some people don't follow them. I don't agree with that.
Would you be willing to accept any kind of new independent oversight?
Well, I think that's an individual basis, but it differs on probably locality to locality. But we have independent oversight all across the country, and we have places where we have great relationships with their community, including in Columbus. It is a disservice to the community and a disservice to the men and women of the Columbus Police Department to say that that they need to have every action subjected to additional layers of scrutiny. They're already scrutinized internally, externally, and through a civilian process. That already exists.
We're talking with Jay McDonald, media past president of the Fraternal Order of Police in Ohio. He served in that role for 8 years. He's now a major with the Marion Police Department, just north of Columbus here. He's a 27-year veteran of law enforcement. You know, another thing that's come up, Jay, during the course of the week is accusations that the police officers have a race problem. Is there a race problem even among a minority of officers?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we have 800,000 law enforcement officers across America, and if someone said that there wasn't a racist among them, they'd be naive at best. But by and large, I don't believe there is. That statistics and science and data has proven that the use of force, when you look at the cases, are overwhelmingly reasonable. But when cops are out of line, whether it be through policy or through breaking the law, they should be held accountable.
Just a couple more questions and we'll let you go. Just looking at the evolution of these protests, now, they have quieted in the past few days, whether it's because protesters have run out of steam, the bad guys have been arrested and taken away, the demonstrators have reformed how they work, or the police have changed their tactics. Police have definitely changed their tactics. They're not showing up in the tactical gear right away. We've seen police officers kneel with demonstrators, march with demonstrators, discuss openly and listen to demonstrators. What do you hope the next time this happens? Should that be the tack that police take right away and keep the folks in the tactical gear, maybe behind the scenes a bit? And if there's trouble, they come out. But should the first response be to talk rather than show up in tactical gear?
Yeah, I think it's always beneficial to talk. I think it's always beneficial to be engaged in a dialogue. And the FOP, whether locally at the state level or even at the national level, have always been willing to join the table. I'm hesitant to give you a blanket, we should always do that, because the tactics and the intel and the history all play a role in determining the strategy of the law enforcement response by police management and by city administration. But I think the goal should always be is what can we do to keep people safe, whether that be the people engaged in exercising their First Amendment rights and the people tasked with protecting those very same folks.
Are you optimistic? We don't want to see police officers harmed. We don't want to see them have things thrown at them. We don't want to see police officers spraying pepper spray on demonstrators. We don't want to see, you know, police officers do what happened in Minnesota. Are you optimistic that this can be solved in the near future, this divide?
Well, I think that today's law enforcement officers have never been more professional, more trained, more diverse, more educated than they are right now, and we can still do even better. So I am hopeful that that the use of force can continue to be lessened, and that everyone can remain safe, citizens and officers alike. We all would hope for a day when there is zero names being added to the law enforcement memorial, and zero names being added to a list of officers or people who've been killed in law enforcement encounters. We all need to be striving towards that end.
Jay McDonald, media past president of the Fraternal Order of Police of Ohio, major with the Marion Police Department. Thanks for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the opportunity.
We appreciate your time. When we come back, we'll get a bigger picture, some research into what police tactics work best. That's next on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. We are discussing the police response to the demonstrations this week. We've seen both sides. We've seen police officers being very aggressive with protesters, spraying them with tear gas, pepper spray, and shooting them with rubber bullets or wooden projectiles. We've also seen police been hit by water bottles, rocks, and fighting with protesters. Where is the line between protecting freedom of speech and protecting personal safety and protecting personal property? We'll take a look at the research into how police handle demonstrations. Joining us now is Jamils Larte. He's a New Orleans-based staff writer for The Marshall Project. The Marshall Project is a nonprofit news organization focused on issues relating to criminal justice in the United States. Jamils, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Hey, thank you for having me.
The research seems pretty clear from your reporting. When police respond by escalating force, bad things happen, correct?
That's right. I mean, there's research on this from as early as the 1967 Kerner Commission, which was, of course, this landmark federal effort to investigate the urban unrest that was occurring in places like Watts in Los Angeles and in Detroit. And social scientists found then, and have subsequently continued to find, that police action was pivotal in starting about half of the 24 riots that the commission studied in detail. And so the recommendation there was that police eliminate abrasive policing tactics, and that cities establish fairer ways to address complaints against police.
So the question is, if that research is there, why do police keep showing up in tactical gear and quickly using tear gas and pepper spray in these types of protests?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I don't think there are exactly clear answers. And I think what you alluded to a little bit earlier in the program, that there has been this kind of wide spectrum of responses. There has not been one response. That departments have not only have departments been vastly different in how they've handled the protests from one department to the next, but even within departments, it's been vastly different potentially from the way that a police chief and some superiors may come out and do, I think, a lot of the things that we're describing, show up in soft uniforms, try to relate to people, talk to them, tell them that they understand the reasons why they're upset, and then subsequently, maybe later in the evening when things get more chaotic, then you see a lot of the harsher, more escalation tactics.
You saw that in Atlanta early on in these protests. I think it was the second or third day that the chief of Atlanta, a woman, was down there really taking it from protesters. They're calmly listening to all the criticism. She drew a lot of praise. That same day, Atlanta police officers tased the two college kids in the car that many of us have seen the video of.
That's correct. And so the latest update on that story would be that Chief Shields has subsequently came out this morning and said that the charges against those officers were quote unquote political. Right. So there is a there's a range. And I think you can see a lot of departments like there's this idea that will point us to a department that's doing this right, that has the right attitude, the right idea. And I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. I think in many cases, there are right and wrong decisions, at least according to the research, being made by the same departments, maybe in the span of minutes, of hours and even minutes. But to go back to your question of why this is, if we want to take kind of the longer view of history, I think you would say that, there was an emphasis on these kind of negotiated management protests. So I don't think it's fair to say that the recommendations of the commission were completely unheeded. Certainly through the 80s and 90s, it was a period of less social upheaval and less unrest, with a few notable examples, of course, the Rodney King moment in Los Angeles. But overall, there was a lot less kind of that happening in society, and a lot of the protests that did happen were within this model of pre-negotiation, right? The community leaders who would be behind protests were clear and known to the police, and there would be some type of conversation beforehand of, here's what we want to accomplish. We want to march from this place to that place on this day.
Yeah.
The police would show up and provide protection. And you know, make sure that there was some order to that.
Yeah, I have a personal story with that. My grandfather was a police officer in Massachusetts for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was right there in the midst of the Vietnam War protests in the late 60s,
right,
early 70s. And there was a university in the city where I lived and where he worked, known for, you know, being liberal. And all these folks were going to march and burn their draft cards. And he sat down with the leaders. The cops were in a different part of town, ready to go, ready to engage with these guys. They had an ugly protest earlier. They were ready to square off with these protesters.
Mm-hmm.
He negotiated with the leaders, got them they can burn their draft cards. They all walked into the buses to get arrested. They made their point and nobody got hurt. And he says the other cops, the other side of the street, were really, other part of town, were really disappointed. So that was, you're right, that was happening in those protests. But the difference here is these are protests aimed right at police. They're not protesting foreign policy. They're not protesting the draft.
You're absolutely right, and that distinction is so, so critical. So what we saw around in 1999, you had the WTO protests in Seattle, and I think a lot of people see that as kind of the metaphorical turning point of this softer approach and this more hardline response of, we're going to respond to protests with kind of shock and awe tactics. We're just going to try to neutralize them as quickly and efficiently as possible. Like Occupy Wall Street is another good example of what you're describing, right? The grievance, mm-hmm, of the protesters who've showed up is not the police. It's much bigger than that.
It's Wall Street, and, big
yet,
business. Yeah.
The police show up, and by acting in a way that feels aggressive and is escalating, the police it winds up becoming an anti-police protest. Right? I mean, I think people forget that Occupy was about Wall Street. It was about the financial system. It was about our economy. And yet, in very short order, it really became about the conflict between protesters and police.
We're talking with Jamil Zlarte. He's a staff writer with the Marshall Project, a nonprofit news organization covering criminal justice in the United States on all sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. You write about many protests, and we've seen it here in Columbus. I mean, we have a very small news staff. We have a staff of three reporters. Sometimes we have four folks out there, and we're trying to cover all of these protests. And there are more than one. There's some downtown. There's some near the Ohio State campus. There's some a little east of downtown, a little west of downtown. And each one of those protests can be different, both in terms of what the demonstrators are doing and both in terms of what the police are doing. Correct?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's also right to some of the former law enforcement folks who I was talking to over the weekend, you know, mentioned that one of the things that makes policing protests very difficult is this notion that people don't sell tickets to a protest, and they don't vet who's coming to a protest before a protest starts. So not everyone who shows up may necessarily either be acting in good faith, or they may be acting in good faith but just have a different philosophical idea of what constitutes an adequate protest, how a message is best sent. So it is confusing for law enforcement when things change rapidly, right? When in one moment they're able to have conversation with people who are upfront and stating their grievances, and the police are listening, and then the next moment there's another faction either who are genuine in their a political motivation for being there or otherwise, who begin sowing, either chaos or violence of some kind.
And you can't blame police officers when they see, like, look at the timeline from this week. George Floyd was killed on a Monday. The protests began on Tuesday. They were happening Tuesday and Wednesday before they really cropped up here in Columbus on Thursday. Here police are at home and they're watching CNN or MSNBC or Fox News coverage of these protests. And they see them start here. So they show up to protect themselves, and they show up in the tactical gear. And that escalates the thing.
I do want to be clear, because there's two things happening here, right? There's, on the one hand, it's what are people seeing on TV and what are they expecting? But I think we would also be ignoring part of the story if we didn't sort of point out that part of the response is simply, you want to come against the police? Well, we'll show you, right? So to make it that there's just this people are seeing these protests and assuming that they're all going to get out of hand, and so that's why things are ratcheted up, I think is maybe oversimplifying, right? There's also a degree to which because police are the center, are the focus of these protests, that the response is coloring, that the response is colored by that. And the fact that police feel attacked or being like they're being thrown to the wolves is part of the reason why you see this aggressive response.
Has there been any research on protesters? And I mean, you talked about the negotiated model, and has there been any research on what the responsibility is of protesters? Now they're not organized in the same way usually as police officers, with a chain of command and things like that, with the training that the police officers undergo. Any research on which forms of protest lead to less violence?
I'm not aware of any. I mean, I think the logic holds, right? Escalation is a cycle. So no matter who is escalating, when things escalate, that just will tend to happen in a cyclical manner and keep going. So I mean, I don't know that we need research to say what kind of protests are more or less likely to create violence. But I think what we do kind of need to acknowledge is that police officers are professionals. It is their job to handle a public safety situation according to best practices, according to what is most likely to get the best results. Their emotions and feelings aren't really that relevant to how they perform their job and the tactics that they bring to their job.
But of course,
they're human. That's absolutely true. But I think we as a society have the right and the responsibility to hold them accountable for doing their job in a professional manner. And I don't think you can hold protesters to the notion of being professional or doing, you know, kind of performing best practices in the same way.
Mm-hmm. The Madison model. You write about the Madison model, named for the former police chief of Madison, Wisconsin. Police send officers out into the crowd to talk with demonstrators. That's a lot to ask, especially if the demonstrators are angry at police. But it works.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I talked to David Cooper, who was the chief in Madison, who kind of was in many ways the creator or the one of the first people to try to implement this kind of model in policing. And I asked him that. I said, you know, isn't that a lot to ask for officers to kind of be exposed and, feel unprotected in that way? And he said, you know, here's what I would tell my guys, and I'm paraphrasing now, but basically, we're going to go out. I'm going to be with you. We're going to talk to people. We're going to listen. We're going to be human. They're going to see our badges. They're going to see our names. We're going to say, we understand you. We hear you. We're sorry. If it's something that, you know, where they can actually, if the grievance is with their department specifically, they'll describe all of the ways that they're going to try to fix it and make it better. If it's not about their department, they just empathize and say, you know, we hear you. And in exchange for asking officers to do that, he said, you know, we'll have a group of stick officers, right, with the heavy gear.
With the batons,
they're around the corner. Mm-hmm. They're hidden. So they're not escalating in the sort of visual sense of trying to shut down the protest before it starts by showing up with overwhelming force. They're there and prepared in case things go south. But I think what the research says is that when you start with that approach, you can potentially end up generating violence, generating a conflict response in protesters that they otherwise wouldn't be inclined to show.
Yeah, I can't help but think that part of the reasons these protests, there's a lot of anger out there, no doubt. I'm not dismissing it. But part of the reasons why these protests perhaps have become as violent as and destructive as they have, everyone's wearing masks. The folks are in the crowd wearing masks to prevent the spread of coronavirus. The police show up in helmets and in face shields. Nobody can see each other's faces. I wonder if down the road some social scientist looks at that and say, you know what, if people could see each other's faces and see them as human beings instead of figures behind a mask, if that would have helped. One real quick question
absolutely. Go ahead.
One quick question. We have about 1 minute left. What have officers learned from the past week?
I think it's too far too early to say that. I think that's, again, like the question of masks, I think we are in the midst of it. And I think the big picture meta lessons are going to be something that we're going to have to suss out over the course of probably weeks, months, and maybe years.
Great. Jamil Latte is staff writer with the Marshall Project. That's a nonprofit news organization covering criminal justice in the United States. Thanks very much for joining us here on All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. We appreciate your talk, and we appreciate you listening. We appreciate our guests for their talking, and hopefully we can figure this out and heal the divide and have peaceful protests that don't result in tear gas and people getting hurt and injured and everything else. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.